Is it possible that my comments on Monday about the Trayvon Martin killing were racially insensitive? And do I have an opinion on the new movie, The Hunger Games?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I am here once again in New York City, the Empire State Building, broadcasting live here on The Line of Fire. You've got questions, we've got answers. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, ask drbrown.org, click on The Line of Fire. What's on your mind? Questions you have for me, biblical, theological, practical, ministry, church controversy. You've got questions, we'll do our best to provide you with solid biblical answers. Again, 866-34-TRUTH. As always, I've got a bunch of e-questions for you, and I want to ask a question of all of you and get your input. Excuse me. I have been asked about the new movie, Hunger Games. I was just wondering if Dr. Brown could address the latest movie based on the book series, The Hunger Games. Dr. Brown has stood up for purity and righteousness, holiness, and I've really appreciated everything he said. In a world where almost everything is accepted now, it's so refreshing to hear someone stand up for purity and righteousness and actually preach what the Word says. I know the Hunger Games has stirred some controversy among Christians, and I really just want to hear Dr. Brown's perspective on this. Thank you. Okay, I've got to be honest with you. I never read the books, The Hunger Games. I'd never heard of them. I heard about the movie when it came out, that it was a box office hit, and that there's a lot of graphic violence among young people, and there's obviously a larger message with it. That's all I know about it. What surprises me is that there's a controversy among some Christians. I don't know what the controversy would be. In other words, why would we be reading the books or seeing the movie? So I'm making that statement, asking that question, based on the fact that I have no idea about the content beyond what I just said. But if there's gratuitous violence, if there is a message that's contrary to a gospel message, if we're being entertained by things that are unclean or unacceptable, if this would not be something appropriate that we could gather a bunch of believers, worship the Lord together and put it on and watch, then I don't know why there'd be a controversy. Why would we be touching it or doing it or going near it? But again, I don't know anything more about the content. So if you've read the books and have watched the movie or know more about the movie, and say that there is actually some area of controversy, that there is a legitimate question, that or that this is something that Christians might see, or you just want to tell me more about what it is, give me a call and fill me in now. So I'm asking you a question, 866-34-TRUTH. If you think this is something acceptable for Christians to watch, or if you know more about it and say absolutely not, completely unacceptable, I would love to hear from you. 866-348-7884. Now, I've seen some movies that have been edited for TV, so certain scenes have been removed. And over the years, I've sometimes seen something that's regrettable, shouldn't see it, look away, sorry, Lord, I shouldn't have even looked at that. Maybe on a plane flying, okay, maybe this movie's all right, I'm just going to relax, got a 15-hour flight, you know, to India and watch it. Okay, no, it's profanity or this or that, can't watch this. That's happened. But my policy in terms of going into things, my policy is if there's profanity, if there's gratuitous violence, if there's sexual scenes, if there are sexual implications and scenes, et cetera, to avoid the thing. Now, you may be watching a movie with a wholesome message, and then there's this one momentary thing, just this one off-color word, and maybe the producers, the directors put it in there so that it wouldn't be rated G, it'd be rated PG. It's regrettable, but it's not like this horrifically polluting, defiling thing. I understand that. But I would dare say the vast majority of that which comes out of Hollywood in terms of wholesomeness, in terms of biblical values, in terms of biblical purity would be utterly polluting, utterly defiling, and we should have nothing to do with it, not be entertained by it. If you wonder why our lives are so lethargic spiritually, perhaps it's the things that entertain us. All right, we'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I do want to get to some comments written graciously to me by a gentleman who feels that my comments on Monday about the Trayvon Martin killing were racially insensitive. I do want to address and interact, address his comments, interact with that, but want to take your questions. And first, want to discuss the Hunger Games issue in response to a question from one of the listeners, Maria. Again, my question is, why is it a question? Why is this stirred controversy among Christians? Why would Christians be seeing the movie? But again, I haven't read the books. I haven't seen the movie. I don't know anything about it beyond very, very limited reports. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. To the phones, Tom in Wall Township, New Jersey. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey, Michael, this is Tom from Wall Township. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Hey, I just wanted to express, I do a lot of a local evangelism, and I was down in Ocean Grove last year, and I handed out a number of tracts that were addressing the sin of homosexuality, which is a real problem down there. And our church was had death threats put to it, all kinds of nasty counter attacks. But my main thing is just to express my gratitude to you for standing for the truth. Paul told Timothy to preach the word, and that word clusters around the cross of Christ, but not just that, but everything that the Word of God teaches pertaining to sin and our need for a Savior. And I just want to say also that when you address these issues, you address them in a biblical understanding of what love is, love for the lost and love for truth. And marrying those two together are so essentially important. And I just want to really thank you for that. And I want to support your ministry.
Well, Tom, thank you so much. Obviously, it's our heart to speak the truth and to speak it in love and to reflect the heart of God. So appreciate that. Appreciate the solidarity. And may the Lord give you grace as you stand for him. Thanks again, Tom.
Hey, can I say one other thing?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to say, too, that I listened to some CDs on by Dr. James White, and he gave a super thumbs up for your book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, and I'm gonna purchase that book. But coming from a guy of his magnitude, he really gave a thumbs up for your book. So I want to thank you for addressing that issue, too, and as well as, you know, I know he's a friend of yours, and he addresses it along the lines of the same issues. So
well, thanks so much, and I appreciate Dr. White's solidarity there. All right. God bless you, Tom. 866-34-TRUTH. Michael in Vidor, Texas, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yes, sir.
Anyways, you know, I went and seen the movie because my daughter wanted to go see the movie. You know, she said she read all the books and everything, so I went with her. And by the way, I do go, I go to the Church of Christ. I'm a true believer of our Lord, our God.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was very upset halfway through the movie, you know, but at the end of the movie, as I walked out, you know, I was very displeased with the movie. You know, it does promote homosexuality. It also promotes, you know, children murdering children. But it also is a warning. Back when the Roman Empire stood, they were doing the exact same thing. They had children killing children. You know, they promoted homosexuality. And it is a warning to the rest of the world and to this country that it can and it will happen again if people don't change their ways and
Got
follow
it. All right.
Lord our God, Jesus Christ.
All right, Michael, thank you for sharing that with us. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me hear from a few more on this issue of The Hunger Games. Again, haven't read the books. In fact, had never heard of the books. The movie came out. I'm not much of a movie goer. If I go see a movie, it's with grandkids normally, so it's a, you know, G-rated movie. And just saw reports about it and read very, very little. It's this e-question from Maria that prompted me to bring it up on the broadcast today. All right, Peter in Washington, D.C., thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, Michael. This is Peter Sprigg with Family Research Council.
Ah, that Peter. Well, thank you, sir, for calling. Great to hear from you.
Well, you're welcome. I just happened to have your show on today and heard you asking the question about The Hunger Games, and I have a 14-year-old son who loves to read, and I read all three books, and then my son and I went to see the movie last weekend. Now, it's a very a complex issue, I think, for Christians. It's not a movie that I would necessarily recommend for Christians, but I personally would not condemn it either if you understand what you're going into. It is very violent, but it is not promoting the violence between young people. It is actually the situation is there is a totalitarian government that rules from what they call the capital, and then there are the surrounding districts who are under the oppressive thumb of this totalitarian government, and they are forced every year to send young people to the capital for these games, in which it is like a game of Survivor, only literally, not figuratively. 24 go in, only one comes out alive. But this is not, to my mind, the movie does not glorify violence. It condemns violence. Mm-hmm. And as for how it's depicted, I mean, it is PG-13. The most violent scenes are filmed in such a manner that the camera, they use this kind of shaky camera style so that you do not actually see the most graphic acts take place. You know what's taking place, but it's not depicted in a graphic way. And I think that's how they avoided an R rating for it. One thing that I did have, though, when reading the books is you have people being placed in these most dire, you know, life-threatening circumstances. And to me, as a believer, they are the kind of circumstances where any person, believer, or even most people who may not be devout believers, the reaction would be to pray, to call out to God for help. And in this movie, in the books, there is no acknowledgement of God whatsoever. The world that has been created by this author is an entirely godless one, and so that is perhaps the most troubling aspect of it for a Christian. I think, you know, I don't know if you ever look at Movie Guide, Ted Baer's website.
Yes, sometimes.
And they do, they rate movies on two levels. They rate it on the quality of the filmmaking and the quality of the storytelling, and then they rate it on the worldview that's presented, on the moral acceptability. For this movie, they give it a very high rating on the quality of the movie making and storytelling, which I would give it as well. They gave it a very low rating in terms of its moral acceptability. I think it is something that parents should educate themselves about before they allow their children to read the books or to see the movie. But in my case, as a Christian parent, I did allow my son to read the book after I read it myself.
Got it.
And then we did go to the movie together and discussed it afterwards.
Got it. Well, Peter, it's a pleasant surprise to hear from you, Peter Sprigg from Family Research Council, especially with such a comprehensive report on this. Hey, last quick question. The previous caller said that the movie promoted homosexuality. Obviously, if that was the case, that would catch your eye, given your eye for what's happening in our society. Any comment on that?
Well, there is no explicit sexuality in the movie at all, or in the books, either heterosexual or homosexual, which to me actually made it somewhat better than a lot of teen fiction and teen-oriented movies and TV shows. But I think what he may be referring to is there are characters who... a man who wears an earring and makeup and so forth, characters who may appear to fit what we would consider to be a stereotype of a homosexual. But there is nothing overtly there is no overt sexuality per se.
Got it. All clear. Hey, listen, Peter, if you ever need a review on the Curious George movie, that's one I saw with our granddaughter one time. Hey, thanks for calling. And keep up the good work, Peter. I appreciate it.
Okay. Take care, Dr. Brown.
God bless. All right, let me grab another quick call. Bill in Harpers Ferry. All right, we lost Bill in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. All right, Maria, since you had sent in the email, we've only got about 30 or 40 seconds, but why don't you just weigh in with what's on your mind?
Okay, my heart is just that we hate what God hates and love what he loves.
Right.
And it's just disheartening to me that Christians, pastors everywhere are watching these movies and God hates violence. No, it may not promote violence. I never watched the movie and I never read the books. It's just in my world because I'm a young mom. And so I wanted to hear your heart because I know you stand for righteousness and purity. And I just feel like, as a Christian, we're losing our moral standard. And we're not lining our things up with the Word anymore.
I'm going to weigh in on that on the other side of the break. But thank you for the call.
Okay.
Appreciate it. We'll be back.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH. You've got questions. We've got answers. 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. All right. Comments about the Hunger Games. Again, haven't read the books, haven't seen the movies. Appreciate the insightful report from Peter Sprigg from the Family Research Council. What I do want to say in response to Maria's call right before the break is this. By and large, as believers, I feel that we have been terribly polluted by the world. James, Jacob, the first chapter, says that part of living a godly life is to keep oneself undefiled from the world. Yes, it is to minister to the fatherless and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unspotted, unstained from the world. I believe that worldly entertainment, worldly ways, worldly mentality have infiltrated our thinking in a vast way, that the way we dress, the way we act, the way we live is massively impacted by the polluting forces of the media. I'm talking about the church, believers. And the idea that to be relevant, we need to know all the latest entertainment. Well, hey, what's it said? Maybe 50% of Christian men or watch pornography on some regular basis, at least once a month, or download pornography or something like that. Does that mean we're supposed to get into pornography so that we can stay relevant? Hey, we got to see all the latest movies to see relevant. Hey, it's one thing with a parent and a child to work an issue through and to talk something through and to decide we're going to see this or talk about this or do something like that. Every family's going to work that out accordingly, and we should be aware of what's happening. But the idea that you swim in the water as far as you can without drowning, or you drink something perhaps more analogous. You drink as much poison as you can without killing yourself is insanity. Aren't we supposed to pursue purity? Aren't we supposed to pursue righteousness? Aren't we supposed to pursue sensitivity and gentleness and graciousness? That comes as we pursue the Lord and meditate on his word and worship him and take in wholesome things. And again, there are things in our world we have to be aware of and work through and understand how to deal with them, families. But I would dare say the vast majority of what we are entertained by, the vast majority of what we take in is polluting, negative. And if we had a deep, fresh encounter with the Lord, we wouldn't think of touching it for the most part. And I believe in my own life, I can become insensitive. And a fresh encounter with the Lord is the very thing that brings awakening to our spirits. Okay, this is an email. Boy, I don't have the gentleman's name, but he wrote in to us on Wednesday about Monday's program. And thank you, sir, for taking the time to write. I appreciate it. I'm a black man and have with my wife been victims of racial profiling with weapons drawn on us. Let me interject my own comments. I'm very sad to hear that. That's unfortunate. And yeah, as a white man, I don't relate to that. It hasn't happened in my life. All I did was drive down the street. I listen to your show and respect your body of work, ministry, scholarship, and zeal for the things of God. So again, sir, I appreciate the gentleness and graciousness of your tone. That being said, I do not approve of your handling of the Trayvon Martin story on your show yesterday. Our theology should affect our lives and how we see our lives. You said that we don't need things that divide us and that you need to see more facts about the case. Then I listened in horror as you cut off the young lady who pointed out that Mr. Zimmerman's father was white. Well, hang on. I asked a question. There's one woman I cut off because she wouldn't let me speak. I don't care who you are. I don't care what you're calling about. If you don't let me speak on my own show, And if I'm getting drowned out on my own show and someone won't stop to let me respond, I will cut the person off by putting them on hold and letting them listen. Okay, I don't hang up on them. I put them on hold and let them listen. So that's the first thing. I'm very careful to be respectful. So if I cut anyone off, it had nothing to do with what they were saying. It had to do with the fact that they weren't letting me speak and they weren't listening. Now, one woman said that Zimmerman was a white Hispanic. So I asked her, how does she relate to the president? Is he a white black? And yeah, that's how she relates to him. Okay, fine. I just want consistency there. That's all. So that's why I jumped in. And this goes on, by the way, do you know that racism is often learned in the home from parents? Of course. And if you know, sir, the way I was raised, you know I'm not a racist. You know there's not a racist bone in my body. And in fact, everything you write in the rest of the letter is contrary to who I am. But then I let the white retired cop from Florida rattle on for a long time on black-on-white crime stereotypes and even justified his murder. I'm not surprised. Cops are often insensitive to the black and Latino communities by reason of their training and what they encounter while working, but that was out of line. I can only imagine the area that he patrolled. Well, he said he was near that area. He said that he worked near that area where the crime took place. And I let him go on because he was a law officer, and I wanted to hear his perspective. If you listen to the whole hour, sir, at the end of the show, there was a black gentleman who called in who was also in law enforcement. He worked in the prison system, and I let him speak as much as I could till we ran out of time. So the two people that I let speak the most were both in law enforcement, and I wanted to hear their perspective. See, I understand the sensitivity. There's more to this letter. I'll get to it on the other side of the break. I understand the sensitivities. I get hit with them from different angles, okay? Yeah, I may be a white male, but I'm also a Jewish follower of Jesus, which gets me rejected from about 1,000 other places. And we minister around the world where there's tremendous hostility to believers and followers of Jesus. And I constantly, when I talk about American history, bring up issues of segregation, bring up issues of slavery. When's the last time I did? Yesterday morning at a pastor's meeting here in New York City when we were talking about various issues, and I happen to make, and why do I quote Dr. Martin Luther King? The fact of the matter is sometimes we can be heard wrongly. In other words, I believe, sir, that you didn't actually hear my heart that day and that you perceive me to be different than I really am. Now, if others differ, I really want to hear from you. I'm going to come back, read more of this letter on the other side of the break, and those that will be leaving me now, you can catch all the show on AskDrBrown.org by clicking on the line of fire. I'd love to hear from others if they agree with this gentleman's perspective and feel that there's a blind spot here with me. By all means, let me know. So I'm going to come back to that more on the other side of the break. But I so much appreciate when someone takes the time to communicate their differences. And trust me, I read it and I examine my life as I read it. Okay? My goal is to honor the Lord. If speaking the truth is offensive, let it be. But I'm not going to be offensive. Follow? There's a difference. Remember, this Saturday night, everyone in Greater New York, this last time I can tell you, this hour, Saturday night, 6 to 8 in the evening at the Jews for Jesus building. That's 109 East 31st Street. Got that? 109 East 31st Street, Saturday from 6 to 8, an intimate meet and greet. We still have some room left, I believe, but call right now to tell us you're coming. Call 704-782-3760. That's 704-782-3760 to say that you'll be coming, or email us at info@askdrbrown.org. All right? We'd love to see you. It's going to be a great intimate night, fellowship, interaction, sharing my heart, encouraging you. We're going to do a live Q&A as well. We'll receive an offering to help with the work of the Line of Fire, but admission is 100% free. All right. So please just let us know you're coming. 704-782-3760. Also, I just checked. We still have a few copies left of Lee Strobel's wonderful book, The Case for the Real Jesus. So please, if you would, if you want to get this, your gift of any size to us, we've got the hardcover edition. It's a great volume. I've got a whole chapter in there as well. Your gift of any size, it's our thank you gift to you. We still have a few left. So call to do that. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Your gift of any size, just request the Lee Strobel book. Keep your eyes focused one place, Jesus, Jesus the Lord.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is that time of the week. You've got questions. We've got answers here on the line of fire. Thanks so much for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I've got a varied stack of e-questions here that I want to get to, and also want to continue to respond to a letter from a gentleman identified as a black man who took issue with some of my comments on Monday. So I want to come back to those. But again, if you've got a question on anything in our areas of expertise, any question whatsoever having to do with anything we deal with on the line of fire, give me a call, 866-34-TRUTH. So back to this letter. A gentleman who did not give his name, he says, "Cry aloud and spare not. I know you probably have many well-to-do conservative Christian supporters, but fear not. You can call sin, sin, homosexuality, sin, abortion, sin, but racism and murder, we don't need to divide each other. You say it wasn't racism, but I heard the 9/11 call and heard Mr. Zimmerman use a racial slur." Okay, hang on. Why are you assuming that I have many well-to-do conservative Christian supporters? Just curious. What would make you think that? And what would make you think that I ever, for a split second, analyze what I'm going to say based on how people are going to give? See, that's why I'm saying there's a reaction that's not based on truth. It's based on perception. I appreciate, again, the kind words, but don't you see, sir, how you just judged me without fact, without basis here, and made a very wrong assumption? When I said racism, based on what I've heard, and I kept saying, I don't, all I wanted to ask was a question for clarification on the hoodie issue. That's all I wanted to ask, because I don't know anything more about the situation than you do. And why would I be commenting on it on a national radio program, on a Christian talk radio? For what purpose am I bringing the thing up? Just for controversy's sake? I do that every day, and we could have the phones going crazy with people screaming and yelling about everything and me screaming and yelling, and we wouldn't get anywhere. No, I was simply getting clarity on a particular issue that was of interest to me, okay, based on comments I heard the last year. That was it. That was it. As to Mr. Zimmerman, I've read reports that he tutors black kids. Do racists do that? Was he guilty of racial profiling? Could well be. I don't know. Conservative Christianity, the letter continues, no, Christianity. How many times have you heard me identify myself politically? Never, because I don't identify as Republican or Democrat. How many times have you heard me say, this is conservative talk radio? It's not. I constantly say it's not conservative talk radio. It's Christian talk radio. How many times can I say, I'm seeking to make a point, follow, that my whole perspective is kingdom-oriented, not politically oriented, not even conservative, liberal-oriented, although I'm conservative in many ways. Use your platform to speak for those who have no voice. He pursued this young man, shot him dead, and then claimed self-defense. Sir, I said what we know is that he was following him and was told not to. I said that on the show. We do not know the rest of the story. If he's guilty, let him be found guilty, okay? But there are 10,000 other crimes committed every day, or not every day, but every year, with all kinds of injustice, and there's no outcry over it. That's turn the thing around, let the colors be the different way. Would there be the same outcry if whites were outraged and blacks weren't? Then it just shows we're both being racist about it. Conservative Christians always talk about the Holocaust, the Nation of Israel, abortion, the founding of this nation, but never anything about slavery, sterilization of the blacks, even Native Americans. Well, I do. I do. I haven't talked about sterilization of blacks, talked about slavery, talked about segregation, talked about Native Americans at times. I do. So why are you putting me in a certain, you're putting me in a class of other people and then judging me accordingly? I may not have a PhD, but I read the Bible for all it's worth. Many of the professed Christians in our country, many of which are conservative, take their values and cues from those who they consider to be leaders, educated and scholars, instead of praying and thinking for themselves. Instead of playing it safe, cry aloud and spare not. God bless you, your family, ministry. Sir, I live by cry aloud and spare not. I do not play it safe. I've lost all kinds of things because I refuse to play it safe. Same here. I'll tell the truth. Thank you, sir, for writing.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is my joy, my privilege to come your way on the airwaves here as a voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Listen, friends, when you encourage me to cry aloud and spare not and don't play it safe, that's who I am. I don't try to do controversial things to be controversial. I don't try to say controversial things just to create an uproar. I seek to speak the truth without compromise, regardless of cost or consequences. And those who've known me through the decades know that is my lifestyle, that is my track record. God is my witness. So if I differ on a certain point, I may differ. But I'm not going to do the politically correct and trying to analyze this. I would not have written A Queer Thing Happened to America and then self-published it with Equal Time Books if I was not committed to speaking the truth and getting the message out regardless of cost or consequences. I would not have made many choices through the years. And that's why many of you appreciate me. That's why many of you stand with me. That's why you pray for me and support me, because you know my calling. I've often said it's like my head is the tip of the battering ram. And if we get a few people running with me, we can knock that wall down in Jesus' name. That's what I'm committed to. So if I see a particular thing differently, it would be useful not to judge me as somehow just going the PC route or the conservative Christian route or just coming from a particular biased perspective. Perhaps I'm being wrongly judged. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I want to get to some responses to the letter I just read. Again, I appreciate anyone that takes the time to communicate with me. We've had some folks holding quite a while. Let me get to some other calls first. Edward in Windermere, Florida, thank you for calling The Line of Fire.
Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First, before I ask my question, I'd like to preface it with I am a proud member of the Torchbearers Club.
Bless your heart. Thank you, sir.
I have to be honest with you. I wish I could donate more than the $25 a month that I'm presently donating, but at some point I will certainly do my best to contribute even more. In any event, my question is, recently I believe it was on CNN, Christian Broadcasting Network, they showed the film of The Passion of the Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you, Dr. Brown, the one scene depicting, I guess it was the Pharisees in the temple, as Christ had predicted, an earthquake took place, and the temple was destroyed, I believe. And it showed, the Pharisees realizing what was transpiring, and they seemed to not only be in shock, but it looked as though they were weeping. Like they had realized, I suppose, what a mistake we had made. And I was just wondering, was that dramatic license on Mel Gibson's part, or is that scripturally based?
Edward, that's even more than dramatic license. That's mythology. That's just created completely in someone's mind. You know, first, there's no reference. And again, I don't remember the scene. I saw the movie when it came out and don't remember the scene, so I can't vouch for the accuracy of the description here. But the temple was not destroyed by an earthquake. That's one thing that's not written anywhere. Whatever earthquake it was doesn't mention and there's no historical account of the temple being physically damaged at that time. But if there were those that were repentant, I'm sure there were some, but there's no knowledge of it. There's no account of it. There's no hint anywhere in the Gospels that many of them immediately realized what was happening. And if I recall, Mel Gibson was certainly painting them in a more negative picture than a positive picture. So perhaps I'll have to just look at that again and see, then I can comment on it more. But in short, there is nothing scriptural specifically about that. There's no reference to that happening in terms of recognition and repentance. So just wanted to share that, okay?
And for the most part, was Mel Gibson honest with the audience for the most part, Dr. Brown?
Well, it's kind of yes and no. On the one hand, the level of physical assault that Jesus endures in it is overstated in a certain way. However, Scripture does say he was, you know, beaten beyond even human semblance, and I believe by showing the physical violence, it was speaking to us of the spiritual violence that he endured. there were various scenes, the role of Mary, Miriam, and it was, in a sense, over-exalted, which would be in keeping with his Catholic background. There were other things, you know, the death of Judas, the way that's portrayed in certain things. There's a lot of dramatic license in that. As far as a basic account of terrible suffering and rejection that Jesus goes through, those things are accurate. The funny thing is, when I saw the scenes with the Pharisees and so on, there were rabbi friends that said it's anti-Semitic. I just looked at them as the religious establishment. In other words, when I saw them, in my mind, they were carrying crosses just as well as being Jewish. In other words, it just looked to me like the religious establishment that always opposes God's prophetic movement. I didn't see it as the Jews against Jesus. And in that sense, Jesus was certainly being portrayed as Jewish. If he was very different than the Pharisees and, you know, stood out completely, they're like the religious guys and he's different, that could be exaggerated as well. But it's a movie. There are some things in it that were accurate. There's some that weren't. You have to kind of take it for the overall impression that it brings. But Edward, thank you so much for standing with us, and we really appreciate it. God bless you, sir.
God bless you.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, Tara, I believe, if I'm correct, that we spoke on Monday, if I remember your name. And
Actually, go ahead.
Yeah, if not, that's fine. But normally we don't bring someone on the same week. But if that was you, I wanted to bring you back on. But go ahead. You had some feedback on the letter that I read.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Brown. Actually, I did not get the opportunity to speak with you on Monday. I did call to weigh in. However, I wasn't able to continue holding.
Ah.
So I never got the opportunity to speak.
All right, so I saw your name. You know, it was Silver Spring. The reason I remember, we lived in Olney for 9 years, which is right next to Silver Spring.
Oh, yes.
So I remembered that name. So we didn't talk, but you did call Monday. Okay, my memory didn't fail me. Yes, please, weigh in. I'd love to hear from you.
Yes. What I'd like to say, first of all, is thanks for taking my call and for what you do. I certainly appreciate the stance that you take and are very public on regarding homosexuality, et cetera, as a follower of Christ. I really appreciate that. But specifically regarding the letter and the caller that you put on hold on Monday,
yeah,
it appears to me, and I would like to hear your thoughts on it, but it appears to me that what both the caller and the letter writer is trying to convey was that it sounded as though there was an insensitivity on your part to the loss of life with regard to Trayvon. Now, I understand that you on Monday wanted people to call in because you wanted clarification on the hoodie issue. And the woman that called in, the first caller on Monday, when she made the statement that white people don't want to deal with racism, it was soon after that that she was placed on hold. And I think that what you may not be able to hear in both the caller and the letter writer is the undertone of the insensitivity. Clearly, both of them are black, and they are very hurt by what has happened. And I guess the hope would be that since you typically are a voice of truth, that regarding that issue, that it would not be minimized to a hoodie issue. And you gave a lot of airtime to the law enforcement officers that called in, and they weren't talking about the hoodie issue. They were talking about things related to the Trayvon case.
Right.
And the first caller, she was attempting to do the same thing, and she was it sounds as though cut off. We didn't know that she was placed on hold until you mentioned that today. So
right.
My question to you is, do you think that for listeners who are African-American and many of them are very distraught over what has happened and what is happening, given that Zimmerman has not been brought to justice in any way, do you think that you exercise the sensitivity that any listener who is African-American and who has been following the case would have sort of expected from someone like yourself who is a follower of Christ?
Yeah, well, that's a great question to ask, Tara. I basically have to go back and listen to the to that segment to see, because I do believe, and thank you for raising it and for the way you do, because that would be a great concern to me if there was insensitivity, for sure. I mean, I thought I had said it's a terrible tragedy, whatever the consequences or results were. And what I reacted to, I guess I felt that there was a push or charge coming against me as if I was being racially insensitive or something. And when I was trying to interact at that point, I remember just trying to talk over the person. I just put them on hold, which I would do with anyone. As the show went on and things kept going in a certain direction, I thought, okay, I'll just let people talk more as long as there were not, you know, attacks coming against any of us. And then the law enforcement, I didn't know which direction he was going to go, but when I saw he was a policeman, a foreign policeman, just like the black law enforcement at the end of the show, I let speak as much as possible. But tell you what, stay with us. You raise important questions, and if I'm guilty in any way, I'll make it right. Stay right there.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, glad to be with you, broadcasting from New York City. Again, tomorrow night, 6 to 8 in New York City, I will be at the Jews for Jesus building, an intimate meet and greet. That's 109 East 31st Street, but you need to let us know you're coming because seating is very limited. So call 704-782-3760, or email us at info@askdrbrown.org. But do it today. We need to know because tomorrow is right around the corner. All right, Tara, back to you. First, let me thank you again for the gracious way that you raised the questions and for a way that certainly gets someone to think deeply. And I appreciate that. It's a great model for others. A good way to get to probe is by asking questions like that. So thank you for doing that. And again, I will listen back to that part of the program in particular and see, try to listen through different ears. Can I just ask one question of you, Tara?
Sure.
Because I don't relate to some of the racial issues either way. In other words, I work with people around the world. I've got dear friends that are white, dear friends that are black. I can't wait to be preaching in the Bronx, New York this weekend and telling me it's where hip hop was born, the very place where I'm preaching and, you know, just multicultural, the different expressions in the body. But I'm always sensitive to the injustice issues. Whenever people talk about America being a Christian nation, I say, well, how Christian were we with slavery, with segregation? And I raise these points all the time. So, perhaps I'm reactionary if someone speaks to me a certain way, as if I'm racist, you know, just like a few years back when I had differences with Mr. Obama over issues before he was elected, and people asked me why I had to bring up race. I said, what are you talking about? I didn't bring up race. I just took issue with a candidate. So sometimes I feel like that an accusation can come against me, but I can never come back the other way. Otherwise, I'm called racist. Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense to me, and I would agree that the presentation of both the caller and maybe even the letter writer was probably not the most effective and could come across as judgmental. But one thing that I would point out, when you began the letter, you read that the gentleman talked about he and his wife being pulled over at gunpoint by police officers, and that you had never experienced that.
Exactly.
What I would say, and I can understand that, is oftentimes because of white privilege, which is very real, there are people who are white who have not experienced certain things that happens, unfortunately, to many African-American people or minorities, Hispanic, etc. And because they cannot relate to that, what they sometimes say or do may come across as racist, and
absolutely,
that person may not in fact be a racist. It could be unconscious because they have not experienced that. So all I would ask is, as you listen to the callers, try to listen from the pain from which they're speaking. Maybe their presentation wasn't the most effective,
right?
But
yeah,
it comes from a place of pain, and just to be sensitive to that.
Yeah, well, Tara, thank you. And I assure you I will do that. I assure you I'll take your call very seriously. And the reason I said I can't relate to it was to make that statement.
Right.
In other words, to make clear you're coming from a perspective I can't relate to. The issue is, and I want to take another minute with you here, all right? to try to understand something. Where I constantly try to recognize where I have blind spots based on experience, upbringing, lifestyle, background, because we all do, right?
Right, right.
What I feel, though, is that I'm unable to speak back into a situation. In other words, I had a few years ago when this first came up about the racist issue, I had numerous black callers call in and say, you're absolutely right in what you're saying, but people won't hear it. In other words, when you're dealing with an issue, they're only going to hear race. So it's like I'm not allowed to speak into a situation. And then when, say, an African-American caller will come and try to address that same thing, they're just written off. I mean, I've got a black pastor friend that, because he holds to certain conservative political values, he preaches sometimes in white churches. He's told me, I mean, he's a dear friend, that he's told you're not black enough. And so, in other words, I'm 100% hearing what you're saying for me, okay? And no defensiveness. I assure you I'll listen back to that part of the program, and I'll get on the air and give my impressions. And I can't tell you how deeply I appreciate your call and the spirit of it. I mean that from my heart.
Thank you. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate the time that you've taken with me and to really hear what it is that I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that.
And it will enable you to hear the spirit from which both that female that first called in this Monday, and the person that wrote the letter, the spirit in which it was written. And I don't think they were blatantly coming out and saying, you are a racist. I think what they're really saying is, it sounds to us as though you're not being sensitive.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And again, one privilege I have on being on the radio is I get to speak to a lot of different people at the same time. So you're always trying to weigh the wisdom of the Lord, the truth of the Lord, with the needs of people, and use wisdom in it. But can you understand from my perspective, though, that I feel sometimes it's as if my hands are tied, because if I say a certain thing, not talking about the Trayvon killing, not talking about that tragedy, but just on other issues, social issues, moral issues, that if I raise them or if I point something out, that I'm going to get branded immediately. And that's a concern, only because, see, and I'm going to have to, I've got to run in the second, almost at the end of the hour here, but I determined when people started calling me about the Obama thing, Mr. Obama, why are you being racist? You bring up race. I'm thinking, bring up race? What are you talking about? Just bring up an issue, homosexual issues or abortion issues or whatever it was. I determined that my goal was to win over the people that thought I had that attitude. And so that's been my posture. In other words, if someone differs with me and if someone's going to judge me a certain way, rather than proving I'm right, my goal is to try to win the person over. So, any case, we're out of time, but I am indebted to you for the call, and I assure you I will have further reflection on it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and God bless you.
All right, God bless you. All right. Boy, what a wonderful call, and I deeply appreciate it. Thank you, Tara. All right, everybody on hold, stay there. I will get to your questions in the second hour, very early into the program, all right? I still believe we have a few books left. It's the hardcover edition, I believe it's out of print, of Lee Strobel's The Case for the Real Jesus. This week, we've never done this, but this week, our thank you for your gift of any size at all to help us with this radio broadcast, to help us be a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church often in compromise. Our gift to you will be the Lee Strobel book. Our thank you to you. The Case for the Real Jesus deals with the key critical issues of the faith. I have a chapter on there on messianic prophecy. But call today, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978 to stand with us. If you want to become a monthly torchbearer, we'll send you that as our gift. You become a monthly torchbearer today, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, it is really essential that we put down our defenses and we listen to one another. It is really essential that we don't wear our feelings on our sleeves. If someone has a valid criticism to raise, that we hear it and we grow in the Lord. Truth sets us free. If the Jewish people are still chosen in any sense, doesn't that mean God is playing favorites? And should a Christian minister perform a marriage for a non-believing couple?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you for joining us. Does my voice sound any different? Well, I'm in the Empire State Building. Now, just to make this plain, I'm in the Empire State Building, we're only 18th floor, and I'm kind of at the dinky little corner of a studio with a light bulb instead of a lamp. We've got a light bulb here, and that's lighting up the corner. But my joy to be coming your way live from New York City. Michael Brown, welcome to the Line of Fire. You've got questions, we've got answers. It is that time on the broadcast. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Any question you have that ties in with our areas of expertise, any question you have that ties in with areas that we talk about on the broadcast, I will gladly weigh in, all right? If I can't help you, I'll tell you out of my knowledge, out of my range. But whatever I can help you with, it's my joy to do so. Some e-questions, and then to your calls. Sandra, I'm a disciple of Jesus. I just watched your testimony. I'm assuming she means when I spoke at Gateway Church in Grapevine, right outside of Dallas, Texas, a few years back for Pastor Robert Morris, when I shared my testimony there from LSD to PhD. I just watched your testimony, and my question is, what's next for those people, who raised their hands? Will they be invited to study out God's Word and get baptized? Full submersion, will there be people in their lives to hold them accountable in their walk with God, acknowledging that one needs God and Christ is great, but what's next for these people? Sandra, when I'm visiting somewhere, I bring the message and then I leave the rest to the people there. I cannot personally follow up, obviously, and you need people who are right there, who live in the area, and who can help nurture and disciple those people. So that would happen. In other words, if someone responds to a message and says they need the Lord, they want to turn from sin, they want to be saved, and those people respond to the message, and then they come forward to the altar call. People will get with them, pray with them, do their best to get their names, do their best to get them in follow-up, do their best to get them into a home group meeting where they can grow and be discipled, and if they make a true commitment to Jesus, get them baptized. Absolutely. Just praying a prayer is never the goal. Seeing people truly come to the Lord and then be nurtured and grow in the faith is the goal. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me go right to the phones. Alex in Linden, Washington, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Doc. How's it going? I have two questions, and they're both in regards to resource material. My first question is the Canaanite cultures. Do you know of any good resources as far as archaeology and just their general religious practices? Because, you know, people want to rewrite history and say that they really weren't that bad, and I just want to get some more information as to, you know, because I'm going to trust the Bible before I trust anybody else. And so if you have any knowledge of somebody who wrote a good book about the Canaanites, that would be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of books on civilization. Hey, you've got email address, Alex?
Yes, I do.
All right, let me do this. When we're done with the call, Andrew's going to get your contact info, and we'll send you a few books that would be good books in terms of background, culture, those kinds of things. But just one quick thing. A general work, InterVarsity Press put out two volumes a few years ago. First, Craig Keener's InterVarsity Bible Background Commentary on the New Testament. Craig Keener did that exclusively for the New Testament, and it just focuses on Bible background. And then John Walton and a few other scholars did one for the Old Testament. So that's a very good volume where you can look up any particular verse, look up any one verse, and when you look at that particular verse, it will then tell you, okay, here's relevant background. If there is relevant background, here's what was happening in the culture. Here's what was happening with history and archaeology. It's a good, reliable volume overall. But stay with us. We'll get to your other question on the other side of the break.
It's It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. You've got questions. We've got answers on this Friday. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Hey, Alex, before we get to your second question, John Walton also has a very useful book, Ancient Near Eastern Thought and the Old Testament, which introduces the conceptual background of the Hebrew Bible. That's another one that's worth getting. There's a lot on Canaanite religion and things like that, but another book that's worthwhile, about 10 years old but still very relevant, by Edwin Yamauchi. He's a Hawaiian scholar, I believe. Edwin Yamauchi, top Old Testament Ancient Near Eastern scholar, Yamauchi. Okay. Someone may call him, tell me he's Japanese. But anyway, Edwin Yamauchi, well-known. And his book, Peoples of the Old Testament World, is still a reliable book. Peoples of the Old Testament World by Edwin Yamauchi. So those between those, you'll get plenty of more references.
Awesome.
All right, so your second question.
Okay, my second question deals with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And in an interview you did with Dr. Frank Turek, you had mentioned that the compilation of the military's attitude towards getting rid of it was fraudulently put together. And I was wondering where you guys got that, because I'm really big on getting resources. And not that I doubt you, because I think it's getting rid of it's a bad thing as well. But the more information I can get, the better I feel.
Yeah, basically, the charge was that the certain questions were not asked that could have been asked, and that many in the military complained about that things were not asked in terms of their own feelings about the very direct changes that were going to come. And there was a report, if you go to the Family Research Council website, frc.org, and then just search there for Don't Ask, Don't Tell, there's some fairly comprehensive reports that will give further background as well into this. And I believe Frank would have been basing things on the same things that I did.
Okay.
Now, again, you know, there are claims now that life is going on as normal. No one's upset. No problems. Obviously, you need at least 5 or 10 years even to look at this to analyze changes. But one thing we do know is that the military has made clear this is what's going to be. And you can't complain about this, or chaplains can't be upset about this, or even pressure in some cases trying to get them, well, you have to perform marriages. Well, then, no, that there was a pushback against that. Just some of the publicity that comes with it, some of the military becoming now a PR machine for gay activism, those are also larger concerns. I always appreciate anyone who wants to serve in the military. I honor that and appreciate it, but have differences, of course, with the whole. But if I don't recall the name of that specific report, because I used it for some of the shows and then put it aside, but you'll find a good comprehensive report on this at the FRC website, okay?
Excellent.
All right, God bless you, Alex.
God bless you, too. Thanks.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Last hour, I read an email from a black listener who felt that some of my comments, in particular a couple of calls this past Monday, dealing with the tragedy of the Trayvon Martin killing, that they were racially insensitive. So I raised that issue, got a very, very gracious call from a woman named Tara in Silver Spring, Maryland, wanted me to consider certain perspectives. That was the end of the last hour. There are a couple things there that some callers still want to interact with, so I want to continue that discussion. Dean in Fairfax, Virginia, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Is this Dean?
Yes, Dean, you're on.
Yes, sir. Yes, thank you for taking my call, sir. I was actually listening to that that discussion that you had with the young lady.
Yes.
And I do believe, and you mentioned something that I think is true, not just for you as a white person. I'm a black man, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true for all of us that when we tend to speak into a situation that people believe is outside of our area of quote-unquote expertise, mm-hmm. that we're written off,
mm.
You mentioned that because as a white person, you can't really relate to certain things, but when you try to speak into them, you are treated a certain way. And you mentioned your black pastor friend who has certain conservative views, and he tends to be written off by the black community.
Yes.
I'm originally from the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And I've had the experience of as a black person speaking to black Americans about certain things and being told, well, you're not black because you're from the Caribbean.
Mm.
So it's not just something that I think you experience, but I think it's something that we all experience when we try to speak into a situation. Even if we bring an element of truth to it, people don't look at what we say. They look at who we are, who they perceive us to be, before they actually say, before they actually accept what we say. So just a bit of input there. And it's almost like a mob mentality where good sense goes out the window when everybody decides to go in one direction and you say, no, let us stop and think about this and speak and say, well, hey, maybe there's another way of looking at mm-hmm. this. People get very upset because that's not what they want.
Right.
It's not about good sense and common sense, quote unquote, because my feeling is that it's not that common anyway. But but that we as people, when we get into a situation where we speak against the party line, we're going to be minimized.
Yes, I appreciate that, and it is something, to me, it's a matter where I ask God for wisdom as to how to speak against the party line in certain sense and not be written off. You know, how can I somehow communicate? And again, it's not always easy, but I appreciate the call and the perspective. Dean, one quick question. How did your ancestors get to the Caribbean islands?
Well, mostly slavery.
Right, exactly.
But I actually do have some Scottish and German background in my family as well.
All right. But in most cases, even though you may not have had the same social conditions in America with segregation and, you know, generation back and so on,
right.
And that whole history. So I relate to that. I understand it. I'm grieved over it. But still, your ancestors, by and large, aside from the Scottish-German heritage you have, came to the Caribbean Islands as slaves.
Correct.
So there's that shared heritage of a horrible past and that you continue to move on from. Hey, thank you, sir, for the call. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, sir.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll stay on the topic of slavery one more moment. Patrick in Franklin Square, New York. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire. Hello, Patrick.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, sir.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to... I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry. I'm really in
the... Hey, tell you what, Patrick, for whatever reason, you're having a hard time finding your words. Why don't you just chat with Andrew for a moment? And if everything's okay, if your head is clear and you're in a position where you can talk, I would love to talk with you. David in Richmond, Virginia, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, Dr. Brown?
Yes, sir.
I sent you guys a check and I saw where it was deposited into Wells Fargo bank account. And I was kind of confused by that.
Ah, okay, because Wells Fargo, which took over Bank of America, is strongly homosexual activist. David, actually, we have discussed... there's a couple of problems. First, thank you, sir, for the check.
Sure.
But the first problem is the computer I'm using uses Microsoft, and Microsoft is homosexual activist in terms of its support. I'm using AT&T on my phone, and AT&T is also homosexual activist in terms of it, you know, which side with the goals of gay activism versus our goals. Almost any computer I pick up, airline that I fly, on and on and on. It's very difficult to find major businesses that aren't standing in league with homosexual activism, either scoring high on the checklist for the human rights campaign or else, aside from that, doing well, say with giving their donations, giving to gay activist causes or their sympathies going in that direction. So it's hard to – and Duke Energy, which is our local power company, is strongly gay activist.
Right.
So there's a problem on the one hand to just boycott. Like, I don't go to Starbucks. I don't drink coffee anyway, but I don't go there to, you know, get a bottle of water or a brownie or something like that. Just personal conscience. As far as banking, we have talked with folks about making a major statement, trying to get thousands of people on the same day to say that we are grieved by your pro-homosexual activist stance instead of staying neutral on the culture wars, and then all pulling out on the same day to make a statement. So it's something we've talked about. It's something we weigh with other people. At some point, we may just out of conscience just try to find some bank that I thought there was another one locally that we could switch to, and it turns out that they were sympathetic to gay activist organizations. But I'm sensitive to it, and we're trying to do things strategically. Thank you, though, for the call. I appreciate it. All right, out of time. We'll be back.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for being with us on The Line of Fire, coming away live from New York City Empire State Building, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, AskDrBrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. Magnus, I've got a really short question. Since you're a Hebrew scholar, I assume you're up to date with this. What's your take on a new perspective of Paul? Really, you need to be more of a Pauline scholar than a Hebrew scholar to have a take on that. But the latest book by Stephen Westerholm on perspectives old and new about Paul, he did a summary volume a few years back where he analyzed writings on Paul and the law, Stephen Westerholm. And then a more recent volume a few years back on perspectives old and new about Paul. That's a very excellent summary, critique, interaction, speaking about what's positive and saying, hey, the old Lutheran understanding of Paul may not have been that far off after all. So it interacts with a lot of the scholarship in a sober way. And I recommend the book. I'm not expert enough to give expert commentary. I'm not a Pauline scholar on that level, but I'm certainly a lifelong student of Paul. And I recommend the Westerholm book. I think it's got a lot of good insight in it. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, this is a question from Tia. Hey, Tia and Jeff. Boy, just getting the email warmed my heart. And yeah, I miss you guys, too. Hope you and your family are doing well. These are grads from our ministry school. So allow me to be a spiritual dad here. Hi, Dr. Brown. I'm writing because I wanted your opinion on a decision Jeff and I are facing. A coworker of Jeff's has asked him to marry he and his fiancée. The couple are not Christian. We're having a hard time with this because we know that marriage is not only a covenant between husband and wife, but between us and God. Jeff did sit down with them and talk to them about the importance of marriage and what it means to us. They wanted Jeff to do it because they have great respect for him and our beliefs. Do we turn them away or use this as an opportunity to be a witness? We both love and respect you so much. We'd love to hear what you think. Well, thanks for asking. That means a lot to me that you would ask. Okay, I do very few weddings. Over the years, I've only done a handful. So it's not like I've had a set policy on this. So some of you that do weddings, marriages all the time, you may have set policies. And I respect those policies if you've worked them out carefully between you and the Lord. But in short, I certainly believe that every marriage that takes place in the world where people get married and seek to do it in the sight of God is valid in God's sight. In other words, people can't just walk away from that marriage and say, well, we weren't believers when we got married, or so on and so forth. So, that being the case, I would just urge them when they're getting married what this means before God. In other words, talk to them as if they were believers, just about this is a covenant between, you know, each of you and God. And God says, "What God's joined together, that no one separate." This is a lifelong commitment. You speak to them as if they were believers in terms of their commitment to one another. Hopefully that will strengthen that union, and then you can continue to be witnesses to them. That would be my take. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, back to Patrick in Franklin Square. How you doing, man?
Hey, pretty good. You?
Good, good. Go ahead. I'm all ears.
Yes. You know, it's very frustrating. It's, you know, it, it,
even hard to put it. Like, I'm sorry.
All right, tell you what, Patrick, let's do this. I'm not sure if you're just nervous when you come on the air, but you've been holding for a while. Share your question with Andrew, all right? And then I'm going to leave you on hold to be able to listen. I will do my best to answer your question as Andrew conveys it to me. Fair enough? Okay, Robert in Chicago, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, sir.
Hello, Dr. Michael Brown. I had two questions.
Yes.
One, for believers in Messiah Yeshua, so those who believe that Jesus is Christ, for a Jewish believer in him, are there certain laws that that person would be obligated to keep that a Gentile believer wouldn't be? And second question was, I heard you say before that you're not a big fan of when Gentiles try to be Jews and mm-hmm. Jews try to be Gentiles, showing that there might be a distinction in commandments that one should keep. And not to be disrespectful, as I praise you to everybody, as I hold you in high esteem, but you being a Jewish believer, not to be disrespectful again, but you live more or less like a Gentile as far as the customs and traditions.
Mm-hmm. So, in many ways, yeah. Oh, Robert, first, you're not being disrespectful at all, and I appreciate you asking directly. So let me answer your questions in the order that you presented them. In the New Testament, it's clear that the Jewish believers continued to live as Jews, as their general lifestyle. It didn't dawn on them that now that the Messiah had come, that they should stop living as Jews. At the same time, they never laid it on Gentiles to live like Jews, and this was the new message. You don't have to convert to Judaism. You don't have to take on the yoke of the commandments. You are not required to do those things in order to be saved, in order to be in fellowship with God, in order to partake of the blessings to Israel. So that's the first thing, that this was not laid on Gentiles. And when Gentiles try to become Jews, they'll change their name. They'll put on Jewish garments. They'll put on, you know, whatever it is that they that doesn't touch their spirit. And in fact, it actually hurts with Jewish witness because it makes us look weird, makes us look strange. So when Gentiles think, well, because I'm not Jewish, I don't have full spirituality. Because I'm not Jewish, I don't equal up to others. Boy, that's a very wrong mindset, Robert. And I'm sure you understand that we're one in Jesus. Jew and Gentile have equal status, equal standing in God's sight. Now, are there certain things that God may continue to require of Jews and not of Gentiles? That's really a matter of the heart and the conscience. In other words, many Jewish believers feel that it's important to remain in solidarity with their Jewish people. Many Jewish believers feel that it's important for them to keep the biblical holidays. Many Jewish believers feel it's important to worship on the Sabbath versus to worship on Sunday. And therefore, they do that out of covenant commitment. And I honor that and I respect that. Now, in my own life, Robert, I don't celebrate any particular holiday. In other words, I don't celebrate Christmas or Easter. I don't celebrate specific holidays, but I'm very conscious of the biblical calendar. In other words, that's very much in my mind. The Passover season is very much in my mind, the key times of the year. If I'm not ministering Saturday, I do as much as possible to make a Sabbath day just to set apart. And I don't eat non-kosher food. It's just been my upbringing, but I don't eat. So to just say I live like a Gentile would be somewhat misleading, but I don't major on that the way others do. So here's the thing. If the church puts pressure on a Jew to be a Gentile, that's wrong. If the church says, in order to be part of us, you can't follow your Jewish practices, your Jewish customs, or in particular, biblical Jewish law, that's very wrong, and the church has done that for centuries. On the flip side, if a Gentile feels they have to become Jewish in order to be fully spiritual or accepted by God, that's also very wrong and very erroneous. And the best thing is for people to pursue Jesus with all their hearts, devour the word, and live out the things that come naturally to them in the Lord. So I hope that clarifies, Robert, but thank you for the call, and thank you for your gracious humility in calling. God bless you, brother. We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is my joy to be with you today on The Line of Fire, coming away from the Empire State Building in New York. 866-34-TRUTH. 866-348-7884. You've got questions, we've got answers. That's what we do here Fridays on The Line of Fire. I'm going to go right to your e-questions. Beth, just curious what you think of the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. And, of course, Rabbi Yechiel Eckstein, just wondering if you believe this is a good cause. Should it be supported financially? Ran across it through Facebook and was wondering. Thank you so much for all you do. Have really learned so much by your ministry. Thanks, Beth, for the kind words. No, I would not support International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. Why not? Are they corrupt? No, I'm not even thinking that. Is Rabbi Eckstein getting wealthy on the donations of Christians? Oh, didn't think that either. However, check this out. According to data I was just sent a little while ago, the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews has a giving list of 800,000, 98% of whom are Christian. They have 70 employees, 90% of whom are Christian. Well, you say, well, Christians are doing this. The fact is, most Christians, according to surveys that I've heard, most Christians who give to this organization think that Yechiel Eckstein is a believer. They think he's a believer in Yeshua. And most of them, from what I've heard, think that they are giving to Jewish evangelism. That's not the case. You say, well, they're helping poor and needy Jews. There are other ministries that help poor and needy Jews. There are ministries within Israel that help poor and needy Jews. There are Messianic Jewish ministries in America that if you give them money and say, I want you to designate this to help poor Jews in Israel or poor believing Jews in Israel, that should be the first area of support. That there are ministries you can give to in America, in Israel, that are believers doing the work. The problem I have with Rabbi Eckstein is that he's an Orthodox rabbi. He does not believe in Jesus, Yeshua. He's fine for Gentiles to believe in him, but he opposes Jews believing in him. He endorsed my friend Rabbi Shmuley Boteach's book very warmly. See, I endorsed it too. I endorsed it saying I categorically differ with this and this and this, but I'm thrilled to see an Orthodox rabbi embracing Jesus as a rabbi and as a fellow Jew. Yechiel Eckstein embraces the whole narrative, which denies the Jesus of the New Testament. One of the books he recommends on his website has a section on messianic prophecy in it that says Jesus fulfilled none of the prophecies. So if he got on the air and said openly, I want you to understand, I'm a rabbi and I do not believe that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah. I do not believe that he fulfilled the messianic prophecies. And I do not like it when Jews believe in him. Would people give the way they give? No, they wouldn't. So I absolutely discourage it. So much money goes there. It could be used so much better for Jewish evangelism. It could be so much better to help Jewish believers within the land. It could be given to other Christian ministries that help Jews returning to Israel and that can share the love of Jesus with them. So why give to a non-believing organization on Christian TV? Why give to a non-believing organization whose leader discourages Jews from believing in Jesus and who opposes the idea that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah? Why? When you can give to believers. Friends, I am not saying there's anything corrupt with the organization, but I believe that if Rabbi Eckstein forthrightly said what he believed and who he was on TV, that he'd be off the air very, very quickly because people would not want to be giving. Again, does the money go where it's supposed to go? As far as I know, yes, it does. That's not the issue. The issue is, shouldn't our first concern be believers within the land, and shouldn't our monies be going primarily to believers? Look, there's another Christian organization that raises money, but it's against evangelizing Jews. It raises money, and then we give that money. It goes to Orthodox Jews in Israel, and those Orthodox Jews will train the kids that's being poured into not to believe in Jesus, Yeshua, as just part of their upbringing and lifestyle. Those are issues that I have. We'll be back with your calls. Shake the nation, change the world. Change the world.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, I'm having a great time as always. Love being with you on the radio. Love answering your questions. Love wading into controversial issues, hopefully with truth and with wisdom. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Okay, before we go back to the phones, in case you missed this, we've had a limited number, and we've got to be down to our last whatever number now. Limited number of the Lee Strobel book, The Case for the Real Jesus, hardcover edition. I believe the hardcover is out of print. It's a beautiful book. I've got a whole chapter in there on messianic prophecy. It's a follow-up book for the Case for Christ that Lee Strobel put together. It was a joy working with Lee. And we've got a limited number of these left. So my thank you to anyone that sends in a gift of any size. Obviously, be as generous as you can to help us with our radio broadcast and the outreach we do through the Line of Fire, which is our ministry hub, the base from which everything else flows. Your gift of any size, my gift, my thank you gift to you, will be a copy of Lee Strobel's book, The Case for the Real Jesus. So call right now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. Back to the phones with, let's go to Stan in Tampa. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, how you doing today, sir?
Doing well, thanks.
First of all, it was my first time calling in, and I listened to what you shared with the last caller. That was very informative, and I like how you presented that to him.
Well, thank you.
However, my question is this. I hear a lot of people saying that the spiritual gifts, like prophecy and so forth, speaking in tongues, healing, all that has passed away with the last prophet, meaning Apostle Paul. And I want to know what your take is on that.
Yeah, well, Stan, there's no way you'd ever come up with that reading the Bible. If you read the Bible, there's no way that anybody would ever come up with that doctrine just reading the Bible. You know, Jesus said in John 14:12 that whoever believes in him would do the same works he did and even greater works because he was going to the Father. Then when he ascended to heaven, sent the Spirit, and then the apostles, of course, performed great miracles, signs, and wonders by the power of the Spirit in Jesus' name in the book of Acts. And then Paul, writing to Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 1, talks about them excelling in the gifts as they wait for the coming of the Lord. In other words, these things are to be continuing until Jesus returns. He encourages everyone to seek the gift of prophecy. He says, forbid not speaking in tongues. He says that the gifts of the Spirit are given for the common good and distributed according to God's will. And then in James, the fifth chapter, it says that if anyone's sick, they should call for the elders, and the prayer offered in faith will make the sick person well. So there's no hint anywhere in the New Testament that this was supposed to stop. When Paul says, when the perfect comes, the imperfect will pass away, he's talking about the return of Jesus and the end of this age in 1 Corinthians 13. So God's still working. He's still pouring out his Spirit. Every day people are being healed and delivered around the world. In fact, in many, many parts of the world today, the primary way, like in the Hindu world and the Muslim world, the primary way that people are coming to faith is through the message of Jesus preached with signs, wonders, and miracles. So God is still working. I would say for sure that there are many things lacking that we don't see, that we want to see for the glory of God and to help a hurting and dying world. And because of that, we cry out. Because of that, we ask God, what's missing? I wrote a whole book called Whatever Happened to the Power of God. But that being said, I don't believe the lack is on God's part. I believe the lack is on our part, and that we should expect God to continue to move. Again, just reading the New Testament, you would never dream that these things were supposed to stop before Jesus returned.
I totally agree with you, sir. I just wanted to hear what your take was.
Well, thank you, sir. I respect those who differ that are fellow believers in Jesus, but to me the word is very clear. And thanks for your first-time call. God bless you, Stan.
God bless you, too, sir.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Art in Roswell, Georgia, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. How you doing, sir?
Very well, thanks.
Hey, I just wanted to give you a quick call to ask you your opinion on on this. This is a very controversial subject, and I hardly ever hear anybody ever talk about it. The word British is a combination of two words. The first one is bereath, which means covenant, and the second part is ish, in Hebrew means man, covenant man.
Now, quick question for you. Where do you understand that that's the origin of the term?
Oh, I know some Hebrew, and I know enough to kind of see where, yeah, this kind of does make a lot of sense.
No, I understand that, but how do you know it doesn't come from a completely different words?
I have no idea as to where it comes from.
Ah, okay, that would be worth looking at, because I can guarantee you it's not related to the Hebrew words brit and ish for covenant and man. I can guarantee it's that's not where the term British comes from.
Again, remember, I said that this is controversial, and every now and then I run into people who agree with me 100%, and then others are like, no way. But here's the question I have for you. Have you ever considered that America has been like, and Jonathan Kahn, even in his Harbinger book, he even alludes to this, that the mantle that Israel was to have to take the gospel throughout the world, that mantle was passed on to the English-speaking nations, where upwards of 90%+ of the missionaries in the world were coming from English-speaking nations.
But it's changed, though. The larger part of the church right now is non-Caucasian, and even if they're if English has become an international language, so be it. But the majority of the church right now is not. I believe at this time in world history, it is not primarily Caucasian. And by the way, the actual term, though, is completely unrelated to the Hebrew. Okay, if you all you have to do is just look up the origin of the word British, and goes back to Middle English, British, Old English, Britisk. It's completely unrelated to that. So it's nothing to do with British. Like I said, I can assure you of that. Now, are there parallels? The calling of America. Americans seeing themselves as a city set on a hill, a divine destiny for America. I've got no problem with that, a divine destiny for England, for different countries. But to make any direct connection between that and Hebrew or the Jewish people would be erroneous. But hey, Art, thank you, sir, for the call. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Robert in Tampa, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Hi, how are you? My thing is, like you mentioned earlier about people that believe that as Christians you need to live like the old ancient Jews in the Old Testament. And there's a guy down here on the radio. He's on every Saturday and very belligerent and talking about us people out here. We're the worstest of the worstest. And Christianity is the worst thing that ever was foisted upon the human race.
Mm-hmm.
And but he believes in Jesus as Messiah. But you better not call him that. He calls him Yahshua, which I believe is the wrong pronunciation.
Totally wrong. 100% guaranteed wrong. The folks that tend to be... See, it's one thing to be a Messianic Jew and to say, hey, I feel to live as Paul and Peter and others did. I'm a Jew. There's no reason I should stop living as a Jew. I've embraced Jesus as Messiah. I recognize the whole body, but since there's no command to worship, say, on Sunday, or there's no command, thou shalt eat non-kosher, or you cannot celebrate Passover, whatever, I'm going to continue to live as a Jew, but as a Jew who embraces Jesus as the Messiah, Jesus Yeshua. So that, amen to that. Wonderful. But it's another thing, and also to recognize, look, the horrors of the Crusades and Inquisitions and the church drifting so far from its biblical Jewish roots. That's one thing. It's the other thing to go to these crazy extremes. I mean, the name Yahshua never existed. It's totally incorrect. There's no such Hebrew name as that. And then to reject everything, as if everything in the church is evil, is completely absurd.
Well, what about the point, though, that he brings up about Saturday being the Sabbath, that on the seventh day that God rested? Is there anything to that?
God never changed that. But number one, he never mandated it for the Gentile world. Nowhere in the New Testament are Gentiles commanded to work on the Sabbath, or observe the Sabbath on the seventh day. The second thing is that Jesus points to himself as the ultimate fulfillment of that which the Sabbath points to when he says, come to me and you'll find rest. So we find the ultimate Sabbath fulfillment in him. And then the particular day, Paul makes clear in Romans 14, a principle he lays out, even though he's not specifically dealing with Sabbath, he lays out a principle in Romans, the 14th chapter, which is that you work this out between you and the Lord in terms of what day is set aside or not set aside. Anybody who lays it down as a trip on you, then unless you, especially as a Gentile believer, unless you are living by Old Testament law, you're not right with God. That person is in error. Thank you, Robert.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, straight back to your questions as time goes flying by here on our Friday edition of the Line of Fire. You've got questions. We've got answers. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us, 866-34-TRUTH. I just received a notice that there'll be gay bingo at the Benton Convention Center in Winston-Salem tonight. Question is, what is gay bingo? Question. All right. Johnny. Hello, hello. I have a question for you. I'm not in any way disrespecting Jewish people or Israel in the slightest bit, but here's my question. You talk about this everlasting covenant with physical Israel still being intact today. How could you say God favors Israel and shows partiality to them, but the New Testament, Jesus makes it clear that God shows no partiality? Acts 10, 34, 35, it's Peter preaching. Romans 2, 11, there's no partiality with God. There's no exception for Israel in any of these. In fact, if there isn't any New Testament scriptures that show any favoritism to physical Israel, and plenty of Jesus saying it doesn't matter if you're Jew or Gentile, Galatians 3, 28 to be one of them, either God shows partiality or he doesn't. We are now all one in Christ, and it doesn't matter what nationality you are, that everlasting covenant has got to go through Jesus, which fulfilled the old covenant, which converted God's people from a physical Jew to a spiritual Jew. Anyone who accepts Christ comes into the adoption of God's new covenant. You got some parts right there, Johnny, and some parts very, very wrong. First, partiality. Who said partiality? Where did anyone mention the word partiality? God's keeping his promises. Is that being partial? You have to make God into a liar to keep your theology true. God made promises to physical people addressed in a physical way, and they would be blessed or cursed accordingly. In other words, there's no guaranteed entry. In fact, they suffered more because of it. Amos 3:1, which I quoted earlier in the week, you only have I known out of all the families of the earth. Therefore, I'll judge you more severely for your iniquities, as God speaks to Israel. So Romans 2, that you actually quoted, backs up the very point I'm making, that there will be punishment first for the Jew, then for the Gentile, and reward and blessing first for the Jew, then for the Gentile. There's no partiality. It's not partial. It is simply a matter of God keeping his promises. So he has made promises. He will fulfill those promises, but everyone has to go the same way, and that's through Jesus. And until Jewish people come in harmony with God's purposes, they will suffer like others will, but they'll be at the first of the list. And when they turn in the right direction, they'll be blessed, just like everyone else, but they'll be at the first of the list. What you have to do, Johnny, is throw out everything that came first. You have to say that Jesus came to validate that which came first, and then he threw it out. Well, then he couldn't validate it. He couldn't validate it then. In point of fact, if you look at, say, Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 31 to 34, it gives the prophecies of the new covenant that God will make with whom? House of Israel and the house of Judah. And then verses 35 to 37, as if someone might think with a new covenant, God is somehow replacing the people, he says explicitly, no matter what Israel does, he will not cast them away, even for their sins. He will still preserve them as long as heaven and earth endure. You're making God into a liar if you say, well, he changed that. He now changed who that applies to. It's like I give a written promise to you and your descendants forever, no matter what you do. I'm going to bless you with scholarships to college and pay your mortgage, and then you do something I don't like, and I say, well, now I'm designating someone else as Johnny. The covenant remains, but I've changed who it applies to. That is speaking out of two sides of our mouth. And Romans 11:28 explicitly and 29 explicitly say that God does not change his mind and that the promises still stand. So every Jew has to come the same way every Gentile has to come, through faith in Jesus, the Messiah. But God has still promised to keep his people, and God has still promised to regather his people. God has promised that there will ultimately be a turning. It has to come the same way, through repentance and faith in Jesus. That doesn't change. That doesn't change. 866-34-TRUTH. Scott in Winston-Salem, we're a little short on time, but dive right in, sir.
Okay. My question is about the law disappearing at the end of time. It says, heaven and earth will disappear before the smallest letter disappears from the law, as if it would disappear. We know that adultery is one that disappears. What's your feeling on that? Do you think that, I know it says the law is everlasting in 1 Peter and Isaiah, but it also says that circumcision is forever. So we know that everlasting and forever have different meanings in the Bible than what we might ordinarily think.
Yeah, sometimes forever can mean, the Hebrew word olam can refer to a certain point in the distance. For example, the man who says, I'm going to serve my master, l'olam, forever, as an indentured slave. In the 50th year, he would still go free. So that means for the rest of my life, etc., unless there's something that changes that. What Jesus is saying, you have to start in verse 17. He's speaking of the law and the prophets, everything that the Hebrew scriptures are speaking of. The day will come when there are things there in the new heavens and the new earth that won't apply. There are all kinds of things that pertain to this world and to this age, you know, dealing with a dead body and purity laws, you know, ritual washings and things like that, that in the new heavens and the new earth will not apply. But until that time, every word is valid unless it is brought to fulfillment by Jesus. In other words, the sacrificial system, which is a massive part of the law, is no longer needed, and it has not been in place for almost 2,000 years. Why? Because Jesus fulfilled that, brought to fullness its meaning by dying on the cross and by rising from the dead.
Is it possible to think that some things that are immoral in this world, like adultery and different things, fornication, would be okay in heaven?
No, there's not going to be the possibility of sin in heaven. Yeah, Scott, in the world to come, sir, there won't be the possibility of sin. There won't be the possibility of murder or rape or anything like that in the world to come. There'll be no more sin nature. There'll be no more devil. And we have committed our lives to follow Jesus. So interesting. That's an interesting question, sir, but appreciate it. That's not going to be an issue. That's not going to be an option. Friends, we are out of time. If you don't get to ask your question on the air, you can always email us and we'll either answer it on the air or we'll write back to you with a response. I was going to give an announcement about New York, but you're not in New York, so don't worry about it. Unless you plan to travel from wherever you are around the country to meet me in New York City tomorrow night for a special meet and greet at Jews for Jesus. All right, last time we can do this. I believe we still have a few copies left. Yeah, just a few copies left. So take advantage of this week. Lee Strobel's wonderful book, The Case for the Real Jesus, the hardcover edition, which I believe is out of print. Your gift of any size to us, my thank you for your gift of any size, is a copy of the Lee Strobel book, The Case for the Real Jesus, beautiful hardcover edition with my chapter in there on Messianic prophecy. So call the Soul Into Our Ministry today or become a monthly torchbearer, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. You know, I'll meet people, I'll talk to grads, I'll talk to people who are limited in income, and they will say, hey, we're torchbearers. We support your ministry with at least $25 a month. You know, I never feel guilty. I never feel bad because we run on a real tight budget and we pour all of our money right back into ministry. So your resources go a long, long way here on the Line of Fire. Become a partner. Stand with us. My thanks in advance. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, I've said this over and over, but I want to say it again. Keep the main things the main things. Major on the majors. Focus more than anything on deepening your relationship with God through fellowship, through the Spirit, through the Word, through worship, through witness. Everything else will fall into place.